This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 158 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. So I've got to make a tough decision about this podcast, and specifically this mailbag episode. Over the last year and a half, basically since the podcast started, I've had listeners send in mailbag questions via Twitter and via email, and I've gotten awesome questions by doing things this way. Unfortunately, my inbox has exploded with questions, and a lot of those questions aren't related to the mailbag at all. They're more questions that deal with rating a team post-draft or asking who to pick up off the waiver wire. I genuinely answer nearly all questions that hit my inbox because I want that interaction, and I want you guys to know that I care. I do care. You spent time writing a long email, and you deserve a response. The problem is that it's becoming overwhelming. Since I feel the urge to always respond, going through emails and sending a response is taking a lot of time. So I've got to pull the plug on the whole email thing. I just have to. I can't be getting emails from someone on a Friday night and then a follow-up email from that same person on a Sunday because I wasn't able to respond over the weekend. It's not anyone's fault. I just don't want that kind of relationship with listeners. That's not the point of all of this. You guys are more than welcome to message me on Twitter or join in on a Facebook Live that I'm going to do each and every Sunday. I'll answer your questions as best as I can. And then obviously you can submit questions for this show on Twitter as well. But the whole email thing just has to go at this point. And it sucks, but it's just how it is. It's really the only way that I can get through this season without the guilt of having to respond back to all of these emails. So thank you guys for understanding. I don't want to be a jerk. I just have to keep it 100 with you. Before we get into this week's questions, I wanted to let you guys know that FanDuel is offering listeners of the Late Round Podcast an exclusive $1,000 free play contest for week one on Sunday, September 9th as part of their countdown to kickoff promotion. Prizes include cash, entry into week two contests, and NumberFire premium subscriptions. All you have to do is head to FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire to enter for free. That's FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire. This first question is from Twitter from @PDXTroyBoy. Rookie running backs and current value versus post-draft. It seems like the shine has faded and everyone except Barkley and Freeman look like they're headed for committees or backup status to start the season. Yeah, this is definitely true. The only rookie with a locked-in strong workload in week one is Saquon Barkley, with Royce Freeman probably seeing good enough touches to be a potential RB2. But look at the landscape. Of the players that were drafted highly this offseason, the only one that's truly struggled is Ronald Jones. He's had issues catching passes, though he did have a nice catch in their third preseason game. It was always known that Kerryon Johnson had the ceiling, but he'd have to fight off Theo Riddick and LeGarrette Blount. Nick Chubb entered an even more crowded backfield than Kerryon Johnson did. Sony Michel had a knee procedure. Darius Geis tore his ACL. Rashad Penny has tough competition in Chris Carson, but he's also been sidelined with a broken finger. So of all the first three round backs this year, I would argue the one that we should be most concerned about is Ronald Jones. At least there's reasons for the other guys who aren't in line for a lot of work in week one. I think it's going to be a season where we may see players like Kerryon Johnson or Nick Chubb dropped in more casual leagues during the first quarter of the season. But those players might emerge down the stretch. This next one is from @CouturRicky. Why are people so high on Jay Ajayi? Right now, Jay Ajayi is being drafted at RB22, so I'm not sure people are so high on him necessarily. I think two things are happening with Ajayi, though. The first is that the running back pool dries up pretty quickly in round four, and that drives up cost at the position. There are question marks among a lot of backs who are being drafted around Jay Ajayi. If we look at last season's data to project what will happen with Ajayi this season, then yeah, you probably think that he's overvalued. And that's fine. But I also think there's a scenario where he is getting goal line touches this year, which remember, he didn't last year, and where he is seeing more snaps and volume through the air. And he's playing on a team with a good offensive line that should be in plenty of positive game scripts. So Jay Ajayi's ceiling is there. Now, his floor is fairly low, though, too. He saw less than 38% of Philly's rushes when he joined the team last year, which includes the playoffs, and Corey Clement had the same number of targets as Jay Ajayi did when the two played together last year. I mean, it was a split backfield. But the main reason his ADP is where it is because of the demand for the running back position and Ajayi having a pretty decent ceiling. I haven't drafted any Ajayi this year in my redraft leagues, but I do sort of understand why people are. This next question is from @ChangLu123. How early would you take Jamal Williams in PPR? So this is a simple question, but I've got some takes on this whole Packers situation. I never expected this to happen, but Jamal Williams is one of my highest owned players in redraft leagues this year. Maybe it's partially a hedge because I have a lot of Aaron Jones in Dynasty, but I do believe Jamal Williams is a smart pick in the middle of drafts. I've said it many times in this podcast, but Aaron Jones, to me, is the superior player between Jones and Williams. The thing is, though, I feel like I can't sit here in one breath and say that running backs don't matter a whole lot in the NFL and in real football, and then in the next breath, say that Aaron Jones would make a much bigger impact on the Packers than Jamal Williams would. That doesn't make that much sense. It's not that fantasy football is the same as real football, it's just that the delta between Jones and Williams isn't going to be substantial given what we know about running back value in the NFL. And let's face it, fantasy football is tied to the decisions that are being made at the NFL level. If Green Bay coaches value something that Jamal Williams does more than what Aaron Jones does, then that's what matters. If they decide Jamal Williams is who's on the field, then I want Jamal Williams. Because I care about volume. I care about what coaches think. And it's not like Jamal Williams is bad. Aaron Jones being a good running back doesn't mean Jamal Williams is a bad one. And it looks like the Packers do indeed like Williams. He's been the one who's been working with the first team this past month. And we already know that Jones has been sidelined with an injury, and he's suspended for the first two games of the season. So logically, during weeks 1 and 2, Williams is going to get some love. And then we can kind of go from there. But you can also think of the Jamal Williams situation in more of a probability-driven way. And maybe that'll help critics see why I'm drafting him. If Williams was projected to be a workhorse for Green Bay, where do you think he would be drafted? I think he'd probably be drafted somewhere in the early third round. And I think that seems fair considering it's one of the best offenses in football and there are question mark running backs that are going in that area of the draft. Now, of course, Williams isn't locked in as their workhorse back, so his draft cost isn't quite there. But it might be something like a 40 or 50% chance that he does lead that backfield in touches by a decent margin this year. Maybe Aaron Jones's chance is like 25% and the rest is Ty Montgomery or a committee. If I believe that there's a 50-50 shot that Jamal Williams is their dude this season, then I'm taking that in the 6th and 7th round all day long. And I think that's the type of probability that we're looking at right now. It's important to evaluate the talent of a running back. What I'm saying here, though, is that it's not everything. Situation is very, very important, and how these coaches are viewing these players is just as important. So to answer your question way more directly, I have Jamal Williams at RB26 right now. I don't know where that would end up in your draft, but I'm getting him a lot given that ranking and where his ADP is at. This next one is from @FFSFDynasty. Do you think there is any way Detroit's offense supports all three receivers, especially after losing Ebron's 86 targets from last year? I think the offense is going to run all three of those receivers. So we're talking about Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, and Kenny Galladay. All three of them very often this year, and each of them can easily live up to their ADPs. But as I've noted on other shows, I'm still concerned about Marvin Jones and his splits with and without Kenny Galladay last year. That's why I'm more inclined to draft Babytron than get Marvin Jones at his ADP. One thing I do want to note is that I've seen the Eric Ebron vacated targets argument out there, and I think it's not fully right. Or at least I think it needs some context. Without Eric Ebron in the mix, the wide receivers would see a hypothetical bump in volume, but we shouldn't and can't assume that other Detroit tight ends are seeing zero targets. I'm not saying that that's what's happening here, but just remember that when a player dips out of an offense, his position is still going to see looks, even if that position is worse off. So we may be talking about like 30 targets being spread across the wide receivers instead of 86. But yes, I think it's very, very possible that all three Lions wideouts live up to their ADP. I also think it's possible that Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay both finish as wide receiver threes, making Galladay the better buy. This next question is from @Slick117. How do you feel about Geo and Riddick as last two round flyer picks, or would you rather have someone else as a bench stash? Yeah, I mean, I just don't really get it with Geo and Riddick, to be honest. I think that they have lower end RB2 upside, I guess, but I'd want to strive for more with a flyer. That late in the draft, I'm looking less for players who will return investment and more for guys who have a path to true RB1 or RB2 upside. And I don't know if that's what you're getting with Bernard and Riddick this year. They might have spiked weeks, but it also might be tough predicting when those weeks will come. So I'm not that into them, and I haven't drafted either of them this season. I'm looking to go with a higher ceiling player like Jonathan Williams or Jordan Wilkins. This next question is from @DocPCassidy. Hey JJ, my league just switched over to auction waivers, $100 budget for the year. Can you give your thoughts about your strategy and individual budget for potential studs and for streamers? If you're planning on streaming with a free agent auction budget, just remember that you generally won't need to spend much at each of the main streaming positions. Because not only will there be alternatives if you don't get your guy, but plenty of teams in your league are going to be set at those positions, especially at quarterback. Like if you're in a 10-team home league where most teams just have one quarterback, or maybe like 15 quarterbacks are rostered overall, you should have three or so quarterbacks to choose from the waiver wire each and every week. And I'm talking about three very viable quarterbacks. And then you could always play a quarterback for multiple weeks or find a plug-and-play option on the waiver wire as well. So at defense, tight end, and quarterback, unless it's a true potential plug-and-play guy, I'm spending just a dollar or two each week in free agent auction budget. When a truly obvious pickup at running back or wide receiver comes, which isn't all that often, you can burn 50, 60, or even 70% of your budget. Don't be afraid to. But like I said, those types of players don't necessarily come all that often, and when they do, they're often not as special as we think. That's what was covered on the waiver wire show that I did with Brandon Gadula over the offseason. Essentially, relying on the waiver wire is a foolish task. But overall, for streaming, you'll want to not spend a ton of money. In most leagues, you can get away with that approach. This last question is from @Brinkerton86. Should I just completely ignore high floor, low ceiling players in drafts when it's high ceiling breakout players that will win me my league? I think this depends entirely on the application. If you're in the mid to late rounds and you're just drafting someone because they should have an easier time living up to expectation, then no, I don't really understand why people would want to do that. It goes back to the Gio Bernard and Theo Riddick thing from earlier. Are either of those players in most formats going to really take your roster to the next level? I mean, if something were to happen to Joe Mixon, sure, Gio Bernard becomes interesting. But if something were to happen to Le'Veon Bell, James Conner becomes more interesting and he's being drafted after Gio Bernard. Like, I'll just be upfront with you guys. I haven't drafted a single New York Jets running back this month. I have no Isaiah Crowell or Bilal Powell on my season-long teams. And it's not that an outlier season can't happen, it's just that if freaking Isaiah Crowell produces mid-range RB2 numbers this year, I'm fine with missing out on that because my projections and my overall process told me that his ceiling wasn't all that high. That I'd be better off looking at alternatives. Like right now, Isaiah Crowell is being drafted one pick ahead of Sony Michel on fantasyfootballcalculator.com. Michel obviously has red flags at this moment given his knee injury, but Michel also has a much higher ceiling than Isaiah Crowell does this year. If you're in the 8th round and you already have 4 or 5 wideouts or 4 or 5 running backs, my stance is that it really doesn't do you much good to draft someone like Isaiah Crowell. Safety is fine early, but go for upside late. That's how you build a powerhouse. That's the last question for today's show, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter @LateRoundQB. Like I said, you can always ask me questions on Twitter or submit mailbag questions via Twitter as well. Thanks, everyone. I appreciate all of you. Enjoy your weekend.